Co-op Radio's Animal Voices is presenting the second annual Animal Voices Film Festival. 2 days of stimulating films, celebrating the glory of the animal kingdom, exploring the thinking and feeling side of farm animals, and showing the impact that modern corporate-run factory farms have on the lives of farmed animals and you, the consumer.
These films could change your life. The Animal Voices Film Festival will also include live music, speakers, and healthy food, plus a presentation by farmer and political activist Howard Lyman, premiering the film The Mad Cowboy.
At the H.R. Macmillan Space Center Planetarium in Kitsilano, starting 1 p.m. on Saturday, June 3rd, and starting 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 4th.
Day passes are a nominal $6 and $5 for Co-op Radio members. See animalvoices.org/filmfest for more details. Welcome, everyone, to Animal Voices. Yes, in this program, Animal Voices, we seek to enlighten the general public about animal-related causes. And yes, there are very many of them. We do this by presenting and producing radio programs that delivers a message that inspires people to improve the lives of animals. Animal Voices is dedicated to exposing and challenging the terror perpetrated every day by our society against billions of innocent factory-farmed and sentient non-human animals. You're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver, affectionately known as Co-op Radio, your commercial-free and community-based and community-sponsored radio station. This program is produced by volunteer members of Earth Save Canada, Vancouver Humane Society, and the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of these organizations. Well, John Pranger is in the control room today. Thank you, John, for being on hand while Alan Jensen is away. My name is Carl Oskin, and in the studio today we have Marge Adams. Marge Adams, and we are awaiting our guest who has not arrived yet, and his name is Conrad Schmidt from the Work Less Party. So over to you, Marge.
Thank you, Carl. I have an announcement that I would like to make, a good news story once again, from Bruce Passmore, who is the coordinator for the Vancouver Humane Society Chicken Out Project. And he's very pleased to report that a high-profile internet company called Google has announced no eggs from caged hens will be used in any of its eating facilities. Since the company has over 7,000 employees and millions of users, this move could be very significant and have a great impact on the Chicken Out campaign, which the Vancouver Humane Society is so involved in at the present time. Right now, these birds are living in poultry barns with multi-layers of wire cages and do not enjoy any of the normal chicken behavior, such as dust bathing, wing stretching, breathing of fresh air, or basking in the sunshine. So it's an extremely cruel industry, and Google needs to be congratulated. I have one other announcement, Carl, if I may go ahead.
Yeah, sure, Marge.
Now, this is another excellent announcement I'm pleased to make. On May the 16th, the Vancouver City Council voted to ban a number of inhumane rodeo events from the city. In effect, this makes Vancouver the first major Canadian city to prevent rodeos from taking place, a huge step forward. The vote by council passed unanimously, and I would like to congratulate ex-counselor Tim Lewis, who deserves a great deal of credit for the efforts he put in with the previous council, which laid the groundwork for this week's approval of the ban. Thanks also to Counselor Kim Capri, who was instrumental in achieving this week's progressive vote. The victory is especially important because it prevents any possibility of the rodeo being made part of the 2010 Olympics, as did happen in 2002 at the Olympics in Salt Lake City. An added advantage, the Vancouver ban puts pressure on Surrey to stop the Cloverdale rodeo, which starts today. There will be a demonstration out there against rodeo cruelty, and that will start at 12:30 today at the rodeo fairgrounds in Cloverdale. Thank you, Carl.
Well, rodeos seem to be a part of the landscape here in British Columbia and Alberta. But we spoke about that last week. Maybe you'd just like to recap a little bit why we feel so strongly against about rodeos.
Well, for one thing, it's simply entertainment, and it's hard to justify animal cruelty just to entertain people. I think it's just totally unacceptable any way you look at it. And there are some extremely cruel events like calf roping and steer roping another one and various other dangerous events that actually, well, last year there was one animal killed and had to be put down as a result of injuries in the Cloverdale rodeo, and that is not unusual, and it's I think it teaches children the wrong thing myself. It teaches that cruelty is okay, providing it's profitable.
Yes, it is indeed very much publicized. But on the other hand, there's been a decline in the number of people attending these rodeos. And I think Vancouver Humane Society, in advocating a more compassionate world towards the animals, is instrumental in bringing this about. Also, that we need to present a viable alternative. And the viable alternative is to celebrate Agricultural Day and not necessarily the roping of calves and, branding and all these races where the animals are beaten. And one of the aspects that really concerns me is that, well, yes, we see these animals, when they break a leg and they fall down, they're going to be carted away. But they also suffer internal injuries, and we don't see those. And many of those animals that you see there, I know Lindsay Bickford, who was one of, we started this program, Animal Voices. He used to have a big issue about the straps that they tie around the testicles of the bulls. I mean, and makes them jump. I mean, it makes them do things which they normally wouldn't do. And is this entertainment? And as you so rightly say, is this the way we need to educate our children that this is enjoyable, a spectacle? Well, it is indeed a spectacle.
So you know, it's really sad when they have to prod these animals with electrical prods and bite them or maltreat them in any way in order to get them to look wild and dangerous. Most of these animals are anything but dangerous.
Now, Marge, we've been listening to the public service announcements on Co-op Radio about the Animal Voices Film Festival, which is coming up on 3rd and 4th of June. Well, I hope everybody is having a look at our web page. It's animalvoices.org/filmfestival. So, but you can go to our Animal Voices radio program, animalvoices.org, which John Pranger keeps up to date, and many of these programs are posted on our program, so on our website. So what is this Animal Voices Film Festival all about? Well, I have to go back to Lindsay Bickford, because many years ago, when John Robbins came to Vancouver, people read the book Diet for New America and put forward a diet which was both healthy for the planet, healthy for people, and healthy for the animals, and taught people about the health, the environmental consequences of our food choices. And what happened out of that was the formation of Earth Save Canada. And John Robbins came to Vancouver many times and spoke here, and it was a totally new message. And then he wrote the book, the Food Revolution, which is just an incredible book about the way agriculture has changed and what it means to us in our present day situation. And even though this was book was written 5 years ago, it was part of the revolution towards organic. People are now saying no to chemicals in their food. They're saying no to pesticides. And that is part of the revolution, which is ongoing. It is still an immediate struggle in many parts of the world, and especially here. Well, so what happened was John Robbins came to Vancouver, Earth Save Canada was formed, and out of that came Earth Save Toastmasters, where people learned to speak, do public speaking. Well, we did that for many years, and Lindsay Bickford was there helping people learn, prepare their speeches, and he videoed it. He was a great activist in many ways. And so what we did was, after a while, we said, well, we're sort of the same group of people here, a Toastmasters group with 20 to 30 members, Earth Save Toastmasters, which is now Kitsilano Toastmasters, still has environmental issues, are mostly often come to fore there. And we thought, well, we've been practicing speeches all the time, many of them about issues which are current at the moment. And we said, Animal Voices on Co-op Radio had died down. The fellow had gone back to England, and we revived it. And so 5 years ago, Animal Voices came to being because we'd often phoned in on talk shows about animal issues, and invariably you only get at most 35 seconds, or if you're lucky, a minute to deal with this issue. So we said, well, if the media doesn't want to give us a fair hearing on the animal issue, we're going to start our own program. So we started our own program, and Animal Voice has been going for 5 years on Co-op Radio. Then we submitted many of these wonderful films. First of all, it was The Witness, and then it was Peaceable Kingdom, to the Vancouver Film Festival to show these wonderful documentaries about farm sanctuary, about how animals are treated, and the reality of the factory farm situation, which we absolutely abhor. And it's probably the reason why many of us are on this program here. So what happened was, the Vancouver Film Festival, in 1 year when we submitted the Peaceable Kingdom, which was shown at the Vancouver East Cultural Center here, they rejected that, and they instead put a documentary on how to skin a cat. Well, out of that was born the issue that we should have our own film festival. And yes, it's coming up on Saturday, June the 3rd, and June the 4th. Our first film festival was for a full day. It was sponsored by Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals, and they made it possible. So this year we decided to have it for 2 days, and it's at the H.R. Macmillan Space Center, the planetarium in Kitsilano. Free parking, and what a program we have there. There's going to be films, speakers, food, prizes, entertainment. Wow, dude, it's starting on Saturday at 1 p.m. and starting on Sunday at 4 p.m. And yes, it's for Co-op Radio members, it's only $5 for the full day. Or if you're a member of any of the sponsoring organizations, it's $5. Now, $6 for a day pass. And who are the sponsors of this Animal Voices Film Festival on Saturday and Sunday, June the 3rd and 4th? It's Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals, the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society, Adbusters, Brighter Days, Earth Save Canada, Common Ground Magazine. If you've seen this month's Common Ground Magazine, there's on the front page, they're featuring our main speaker, who is Howard Lyman, and we'll talk more about that. Our other sponsors are Coalition for the No Whales in Captivity, Radha Yoga, WSPA Canada, ZooCheck, Whale Friends, and Farm Sanctuary, and People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals in Norfolk, Virginia, and downbound.ca in Toronto, where you can buy products that are animal friendly. And I was told last week when we did the interview with Adam, and he said, I said, why is it called downbound? And he said, well, it's downbound because we're downsizing. We're making things simpler. Instead of the whole issues of where we're using leather, we're using hemp products, and they're viable. And the more people are buying these products, the less expensive they will become. And it's just like the organic issue. As people are becoming conditioned to buy products without pesticides, without animal cruelty, with food products that don't have indiscriminate fungicides sprayed on them, that have not been raised with chemicals. That's what's called downsizing, and that's what downbound is all, downbound.ca is all about.
That's well, Marge, wonderful, Carl. I'm so impressed with the work you have done. Getting all those sponsors was no easy job in itself, I'm sure. And that I can highly recommend the festival. I went last year. It was wonderful. All kinds of ideas and people who think as we think. I think it's always very satisfying if you're an animal lover to be amongst animal lover and environmentalists and caring people. And the venue this year is really quite impressive.
It is nice venue, and people need a bit of a break. They can walk out into walking along the waterfront and have a look at the mountains on the north side. Well, you know, Marge, we had Howard Lyman on about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago on our program Animal Voices, and he will be introducing the documentary Mad Cowboy. And you know, he was the author and former cattle rancher from Montana.
Yes, an interesting speaker.
He always is fascinating and entertaining too. And he always calls himself
Mad Cowboy.
The only V person in Montana, where it was more popular to be rustling cattle than to be called a V person. And the V person was a vegetarian.
Yeah, he was very hesitant about using that word, wasn't he?
He gave up his cattle ranch, and they saw it was a, you know, the documentary, to my mind, is really the history of the past 40 years and Howard Lyman's experience of what's happened with agriculture in worldwide. Because what we've moved from is we've moved from family farms. We've seen the destruction of family farms. We have moved from family farms to factory farms. You know, Marge, all you have to do is go out into Fraser Valley and you'll see all these hothouses. Now with climate change, even more so, we're living in controlled areas. Don't go outside. You know, you might get sunburned. You might get overexposed. Mm-hmm. Skin cancer and melanoma is endemic. And
I often wonder about all the greenhouse production and how nutritious is it compared to organic farming in the open.
Well, you know, I know of a tomato farmer in Duncan, and he grows his tomato plants. They grow to be about 8 feet tall, and he gets an enormous crop, and it's distributed all over. And the plants are actually rooted in sawdust, and they're fed chemicals. And you know, if you even see in health food store, these tomatoes, they all look identical. Doesn't that tell you, make you wonder about this sort of, how did they manage to clone these tomatoes to all look alike?
Absolutely.
And they're called organic because they never sprayed, but they're growing in these hothouses. To my mind, it's a product which is produced with chemicals. And that's what Howard Lyman was standing out for. He said, Mom, when he came back from university, he said, Mom and Pop, move over. Mm-hmm. You know, this is modern ag. We're going to turn this farm into what agribusiness says. And then he came down with cancer. He saw the birds disappear from his farm. He saw the worms, the earthworms, disappearing. He saw this enormous change in the value of the food we are producing. And that's the story of this documentary, Mad Cowboy. He catalogues it in such a wonderful way about what's happened to the animals, what's happened in agribusiness, what's happened with him when he was in Washington, D.C., and he was a lobbyist there. For a more compassionate world. And he's written his book, The Mad Cowboy, which was a bestseller, and now he's come up with a book which is going to be released in Canada for the first time. It's called No More Bull. And we could congratulate Common Ground magazine because in the May edition, it's on the front page, No More Bull. You want to know more about what No More Bull is about? Pick up your copy of Common Ground magazine. Thank you, Joseph Roberts and the staff at Common Ground magazine for producing a magazine which heightens also the spiritual aspect of the food we eat.
Right. I can't help but dwell on those tomatoes you were telling us about, Carl. I buy these tomatoes, as a matter of fact, that are locally produced and they're vine ripened and they look beautiful. Now, I wonder what I'm eating when I eat those tomatoes.
Now, Marge, when I used to go to my friend who had this farm, he actually immigrated to Canada in 1967, the same year as I did, and he always used to give me, when I used to visit him, a big bag of tomatoes. And you know, when I eat those tomatoes, it makes the bristles on my tongue stand up.
Really?
I mean, and you know, I'll eat tomatoes from my garden or ones that are truly organically grown. And of course, you know, tomatoes do have acid content, like oranges, and it's alkaline forming in your system. But my body reacts against that food object. And you know, and it instinctively tells me that because I've been a vegan for so many years, my body has become sensitized to the food I eat. And I've been a raw fooder for much of my time.
What about the flavor? I'm sure you're sensitized to flavors more so than a person who would be on a mixed diet.
Well, you know, I think even the flavor changes when you have your plants growing in a covered area.
Oh, yes.
Because certain of the rays, the sun's magnificent rays, are being excluded.
Right, you're right.
So,
yeah.
That, you know, as we used to say, everything that grows on this earth comes from the sun.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so, mm-hmm. All the plants we eat, you know, that's the first issue.
Yeah, we think we're getting such a well-balanced diet and so on, but we may be deficient in all kinds of things as a result of the way these vegetables are and fruits are produced. Not that's just the toxins, but the lack of so much.
That's right, Marge. Mm. Marge, I'll tell you on our film festival, and I want to tell everybody to come, to put on their calendar, 1 o'clock on Saturday, the 3rd of June, Sunday, 3 o'clock, the 3rd of June at the H.R. Macmillan Planetarium in Kitsilano. You absolutely have to be there. I believe we're getting some publicity, and we need to have many of the issues. I'm going to ask John to play a little music, maybe even play our cards again, since we've been... we've got to thank Co-op Radio for assisting us, and hopefully many of the other programs like Wake Up with Co-op, wonderful news program, The Red Eye on Saturday, hopefully they will have Howard Lyman or Dana Lyons on. You can call me. People can call me at 604-924-4966. We're available. We have a wonderful issue. It's the issue that saves animals.
Co-op Radio's Animal Voices is presenting the second annual Animal Voices Film Festival. 2 days of stimulating films, celebrating the glory of the animal kingdom, exploring the thinking and feeling side of farm animals, and showing the impact that modern corporate-run factory farms have on the lives of farmed animals and you, the consumer.
These films could change your life. The Animal Voices Film Festival will also include live music, speakers, and healthy food, plus a presentation by farmer and political activist Howard Lyman, premiering the film The Mad Cowboy.
At the H.R. McMillan Space Center Planetarium in Kitsilano, starting 1 p.m. on Saturday, June 3rd, and starting 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 4th.
Day passes are a nominal $6 and $5 for Co-op Radio members. See animalvoices.org/filmfest for more details. Yes, and you've been listening to that wonderful piece of music, so bucolic, and it's Tchaikovsky's The Seasons, and the season is May. Couldn't you just smell the meadows going away? I did. It touches me deeply. Thank you for playing that, John. Well, soon we'll be... Maybe you can just tell who's going to be on fairly soon, Marge.
Yes, we are expecting a call from Megan McGeechee very shortly, and she is with the Cat Coalition.
Right, we're going to have the Cat Coalition on pretty soon. You're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio, 102.7 FM. Our webpage is www.animalvoices.org. And for the film festival, it's animalvoices.org. Film Fest. So there we go. You know, Marge, this week we had the issue that one of the dolphins that was caught in Japan has been recognized as being pregnant. Well, I was speaking to one of the people from the Coalitions for No Whales in Captivity, who've been monitoring what's been happening there. And I've been told that this dolphin is absolutely terrified. They want to train her. And while they were trying to train her, and there was loud music in the background, because at the Vancouver Aquarium there's always all kinds of entertainment and parties going on, she's pregnant. She jumped out of the pool. She's pregnant, and they had to put her back in. Well, we hope that's... hasn't been any damage to the baby dolphin, but it just shows you what a horrendous situation it is to take a dolphin from way over near Japan, bring it over here, put it in this tiny tub, and make it do tricks. Well, we're opposed to that. We're not opposed to education. We're not opposed to people understanding the issues about animals, but we are opposed, as we are opposed to rodeos, to using animals for entertainment. Sadly, it's not seen as in this light by many of the people who continue to visit this venue. We suggest people do not visit this venue. We suggest that this is not an attraction where people should be taking their children. We suggest that video information is a much better method than making whales, killer whales, jump through hoops. Yes, it is spectacular to watch these animals. Well, you know, Marge, over to you. And we have our caller, Over to you.
Hello, Megan. Are you there?
Hi, I am, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. And thank you for being so punctual.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Now, maybe we could start, Megan, by having you tell us what are the goals of the Maverick Cat Coalition?
It's to help homeless and abandoned cats. And we do that by doing a trap, neuter, release program, wherein we go in and check out the feral colony and see what condition everybody's in, and then we trap them. We spay, neuter, vaccinate, release them back to the location, and then provide a caregiver.
I see, and this is a very difficult. It sounds quick and easy the way you put it forth, but it's more than a lot more than that, isn't it?
That's the brief description, yeah. Feeders go every day and feed the cats for the life of the colony. So it is a long-term commitment on behalf of our volunteers. It's completely volunteer. It's no kill. And we don't test animals for FIV or any of the other diseases, because we're there to actually, you know, help the animals and put them back to where they came from, and so they're still within their comfort zones.
And how long has this group existed?
It was David Fowler and Celia Wong that started it back in 2001, and it became a federally registered charity in 2002. So it's been around about 5 or 6 years.
I see. I bet you helped a great number in that period of time, and are still helping many of them, I guess, huh?
Yes. 506 cats since inception, and we've assisted 137 caregivers. And by assistance, I mean provide food or veterinary support, because we do pay, of course, for all the veterinary needs of the cats. And help the caregivers in any way that they that we can assist them, whether it's helping them trap or providing the trap, or maybe giving them backup volunteer support if they're going on holidays. They need someone to go in and feed their colony, then we'll do that for them as well.
And you have you recruit, I guess, neighborhood people, do you, to do that?
Often the people that call in, because there's a feral cat problem in their area, become the long-term caregivers for the colonies. And that's sort of the best-case scenario for us because we do have limited volunteers. So generally, the two colonies that I had worked on in Coquitlam, and I was feeding, the owners, the homeowners, or someone who lived very close by, then took over the feeding of the cats and then would certainly let us know if there's any issues or if, you know, any of the animals had injuries or needed to be retrapped to get veterinary care. So it really helps us out a lot. We are short of trappers right now, specifically in the Surrey area.
I see.
We're in desperate need. We have some colonies out there of 15 to 20 cats that need to be trapped, spayed, neutered, vaccinated, and then returned.
That's a very large colony, 15 to 20 cats. I'm amazed that the cats get along that well, that they all stay in a colony so large.
It's sort of a survival instinct on their part. When we feed, we tend to attract, you know, others that might be in the neighborhood but maybe not at that location. So because there's a regular food supply, you may find that one or two more show up over the period of time. But that's a survival instinct for the cats.
And how do you know whether these are owned cats?
Well, we do check for tattoos. And when we take them in to have them spayed or neutered, we scan for microchips. We try to let people in the area know by sending out little notices the week that we're going to trap to say that, you know, we are arranging to trap feral cats in your neighborhood to, you know, again, spay, neuter, vaccinate them so they don't create disease in the area. And, you know, if you have any house pets, we're going to be in the area hopefully Tuesday and Wednesday night. Please keep your own cats indoors. If your cat goes missing during that period of time, let us know. But, you know, the cats will be back in 2 or 3 days either way. Mm-hmm. So it has happened on occasion where an owned pet has been captured, spayed or neutered, and the owner has thanked us and said, oh, I'm so glad. You know, I keep meaning to do it, and I never got around to it, so I do appreciate it.
And hopefully give you a donation as a result.
Donations are always appreciated.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, because it's a costly business, isn't it, feeding lots of animals?
Well, feeding and the spaying and neutering costs as well, spaying, neutering, and vaccination. We're fortunate that we have the support of some excellent vets. Atlas Animal Hospital has been a long-term supporter as far as providing reduced fees for veterinary services. But that's probably our biggest expense would be the veterinary expenses.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Now, I'm sort of puzzled with this when I was thinking about your group, and I thought, now, you have a totally reverse way of helping cats than most people who go into cat welfare, and that is they usually set up a shelter. Now, you haven't done that. You've chosen to feed the cats and look after them. Now, I want on their own premises, really, or their own location. Now, I wonder if that's a philosophical difference on your part, and you feel this is the way it really should happen, or is it simply for practical concerns of not having a shelter, for example?
Our ideal situation, of course, would be, you know, a couple of acres, 10 or 15 or 20, where we could keep feral cats contained, and we could have a place to support them in their own environment. Because out of necessity at this point that we do the best that we can in that we return them to their own locations, because they usually have established groups that they live in, and so to separate those animals causes extreme anxiety. And there has been cases where we've had to relocate because the area that the animal was in was not safe enough for a volunteer to go in and feed, and we found that, you know, a couple of weeks later, that cat has gone back to its original location. So mm-hmm. It's where the cat's grown up. It's, you know, that's their lifestyle. They don't know any different. It's one thing when you're talking a house cat that's grown up around human beings, but a true feral has had little or no human companionship.
And are they mostly feral cats that you deal with, or are they, maybe they've had owners and they've just wandered away, the owners left them? I know that does happen.
We do get abandoned house cats, and when we're doing, as I say, when we trap, we do check for any form of identification, whether it's a collar, a tattoo, or a microchip when they get scanned, and those cats will go to a shelter environment. And again, we have other supporters in that area, such as Meow Aid Homeless Cat Shelter and Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue if we have really small kittens that need to be cared for and, you know, maybe need hand feeding and whatnot. They've been absolutely fabulous with us, as has the Coquitlam Animal Shelter. So we're really fortunate that we have this great network of supportive people that help our group. And then we also help them because a lot of the calls that we get may be referrals from other groups that receive the call. Mm-hmm. But it is I think the biggest thing for all animal groups is the education for people to have their animals spayed or neutered, and we could prevent the problem in the first place.
Now, how widely spread are your volunteers? I know you've mentioned Coquitlam and Surrey. Are they all around the Lower Mainland?
Yes, they are. We cover all of Greater Vancouver. There is another group in Vancouver called Urban Lions, which also does some feral cat rescue. We have volunteers from Vancouver, New West, Coquitlam, I believe Burnaby, but we'll go out to Surrey. I don't think we've done too much in Maple Ridge, but occasionally White Rock. You know, the distance is quite far, and that's why, particularly with Surrey and these larger colonies that we're looking at right now, we're hoping to get people that live in the area, simply because trapping, you basically go to a site and you sit there for several hours because you have to watch the traps. We never leave them unattended. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's obviously more convenient if somebody lives close by than if they have to drive from Burnaby to Surrey and then sit there for 4 or 5 hours and bring the animals back to the vet. So.
Sure. Now, do most of your referrals come from neighbors of the colonies or maybe people who just have a stray cat that wanders into the backyard? Is that mainly where they come from, or do you get references for, say, from veterinarians?
We get actually referrals from SPCA and whatnot because they are not able to go out and, you know, they obviously don't have the paid resources mm-hmm. to go out and, you know, sit at a site for 5 or 6 hours to catch the cat. So we do get referrals from them, but generally it's a call from the public initially that starts the whole process, and whether that's that person calling the SPCA and then being referred to us, or another group, not necessarily always the SPCA, or the person, you know, is aware of our organization and calls us themselves directly. Then we go out and assess the situation, and then from there we decide on a plan. And, again, it's always subject, unfortunately, to availability of volunteers.
I see. Now, and so your plan may involve capture or may not, I guess, huh?
We hope to trap everybody at one point because we want to have them vet checked. That may be the only vet check they ever have, is when we first go into the colony, we want to trap everybody once, have them spayed or neutered, or check to make sure, you know, maybe they already are. Also establish that they are an abandoned house cat, if they can be re-socialized. And that goes to whether the animals are, you know, if they tend to just completely hide, or if they sort of approach because they're curious, you can kind of get a feeling for, you know, these ones might be adoptable, in which case that's when we would ask, say, Meow Aid or someone, once we trap them and realize that, oh, yeah, they're definitely a house cat and they're, you know, pretty social, they've just been abandoned, those ones can be placed, and it's the ferals that will return after they've had the veterinary attention. Because we want to make sure that the colonies won't continue to increase.
So you don't try to tame or train these feral cats, usually?
We do with the kittens.
Oh, you do, I see.
Kittens up to about 3 months old can generally be socialized. And even a little bit later than that, and we have one lady out in Surrey, and I apologize because her name just jumped out of my memory right now. She's been absolutely fabulous in re-socializing some of the cats, the kittens particularly, that were a little bit older, and she's been able to re-socialize them. And she's taken on some of the cats as well. And I know one of the cats that went to Coquitlam Animal Shelter, it was a female mother. She'd been feral for a couple of years, and they were able to re-socialize her. So some of them you can, and some of them are definitely, they're just wild animals. They're, you know, it's like taking a wild animal out of the jungle and expecting it to live in your house.
What reaction do you get from neighborhoods when you're feeding these colonies of cats? Now, if you don't have a... If there's a report from maybe an irate neighbor saying, I'm fed up with all these cats around my neighborhood, and how do you respond to that? Or do you maybe you don't get that kind of reaction?
We get it from all aspects of the continuum, from people who are thrilled that we're there and that someone's finally taking care of these poor cats. We get that side, and then we do get the other side as well, where people just want them gone. And that's where I believe it's really more of an educational process to go through with them and you know, telling them what it's all about and how, why those animals exist there in the first place, that someone didn't spare or neuter their cats. These kittens have grown up in the wild without human companionship. They can't normally be resocialized and adopted, that they're safer in their own environment with their family group that they've grown up with, their colony. And we also give them some strategies. There's different things you can use to stop them from, you know, going to the bathroom in the gardens. If you have a vegetable garden or something, you can put paprika on it so when they dig, they sneeze and they don't want to be there. You know, there's little things that you can do to sort of reduce the amount of nuisance they might be for one particular neighbor if that person's extremely upset. If we feel that the animals are being threatened, we will do our best to try and relocate them to another area.
And that must be a real job because they'll be, as you mentioned earlier, some will wander back to the original colony area.
Yes, that's right. And sometimes we have to do it also for the safety of volunteers. If it's, you know, down by the dockyards or something, and, you know, there may not be a lot of volunteers that want to go down there at, you know.
Is there some way you discourage the cats from wandering away from the new location?
Pardon me?
Is there a way to discourage the cats from wandering away from the new location? I suppose feeding them is one, isn't it?
And if we can, and I only say this, I haven't really been personally done it before, but, you know, if you could contain them for a certain period of time near the location and then, you know, start feeding them in that area so that they get used to it, that would be the best case scenario. But sometimes it's a matter of finding a group that has a shelter or foster parents, in a sense, that are willing to have the cats live around their house, you know, more along those lines, because we don't have a piece of property that we could fence.
Ah, yeah. So
that would be the ultimate goal, is, you know, several acres where we can fence the entire outside and sort of up above where the cats can't climb out and have, you know...
Yeah, have a habitat there for them. I think the Richmond organization has a huge area. Richmond Home, are you still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh,
Richmond
good.
Homeless Shelter.
Yeah.
I haven't been out there myself.
Very impressive. You should go one day. It's wonderful to see.
But they have assisted us on a couple of occasions as well.
Oh, I see.
So, and I'm aware of them. I just haven't been out to visit it myself, but I'm sure it's fantastic.
Have you any tips for people like myself who has a neighbor who doesn't like cats? And I try to keep my cat out of her yard, but not always successful because she grows vegetables and she doesn't want the cats in the vegetable area and so on.
For,
other than the cayenne or the
paprika. Anything that's going to be irritating to their nose.
I see.
You can put that in there. Just, you know, sprinkle it and mix it in around. There are some plants, and I apologize, I wasn't prepared.
I should have mentioned it.
There are some plants that you can use that cats just don't like the smell of, so they won't go there.
Uh-huh.
Check with your local garden center would be my best referral, or check out, I'm not sure if it's even on our website at maverickcat.com, but there's several sites that do offer that kind of advice, and even the veterinarian would be able to tell you.
Okay, thanks for that. And now, maybe we could end on a happy note. Can you tell us about a relocated cat or a cat that's been under your care for a long time and it's all going well?
Yeah, there's actually three little kittens that came from one of the Coquitlam colonies, and there was initially five kittens. The other two we weren't able to trap, but we did get the three. Three Siamese with blue eyes. One was a Manx, and the other two had the regular size tails. They're absolutely adorable. And one sort of took on the role of the protector of its siblings. And that night I brought the kittens home to keep them overnight until I could get them to the shelter in the morning because the shelter was closed already. And I put them on the bed in my son's room. We started playing with them, and within about 10 minutes they were all purring and falling all over each other, and you could tell that they were going to be resocialized, no problem. So they were at the shelter, and I checked in every week to see how they were doing, and they've all been adopted. So that was just...
That's lovely. Was that quite recent?
That was about last summer, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
Yeah, so it's fantastic. Just fantastic.
Summer is a busy time for you, I guess, isn't it?
Spring, we get a lot of calls because some of the colonies are right behind commercial areas or malls, And so they, you know, the retailers and whatnot will notice that, oh, I've been seeing little kittens running all over and whatnot. And that's one of the calls that, on one hand, we'd like to get it because hopefully the kittens are young enough that they can be re-socialized. But also it means that, you know, there's an unspayed female that's there, and so the colony could be quite big, and we don't know until we get there how big it's going to be. But the average colony I've dealt with is, well, 14 was one in Coquitlam and the other one was 6, and with 5 kittens on the way, so it was 11. That would have been a lot more in a couple more years. They can procreate quite quickly.
And I guess they can get up to dozens and dozens if they're left in the same place long enough, and it has enough area for them, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a warehouse out in Abbotsford, and I believe they had, I think it was 6 trappers went out, and there was over 25 cats.
Wow.
One location. And, you know, what they're living on out there, perhaps maybe with the grass areas and whatnot, there's a lot more mice. And things for them to eat, I'm not sure, but they were surviving in this old warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess our time is up, Megan. It's been most interesting hearing about your organization, and maybe you could just give us a contact phone and the website?
Yes, okay. Our telephone number is 604-521-8200. Our website is www.maverickcat.com. And you can email us at info@maverickcat.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Marge.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to an interview with Megan McGeechee of Maverick Cat Coalition.
Thank you, Marge. And, well, it's a long weekend coming up. Many people are going out to their cabins. And, of course, when I first came to Canada in 1967 and early 1970s, I also used to go out to the Gulf Islands. And I became a vegetarian in the 1980s. But at that time, there was still a lot of fish in the area, and we used to catch salmon. And when I go back to De Courcy Island I say to him, you know, do you catch any salmon? He says, no, you know, Carl, we don't even catch any cod. And I know you knew where all the holes were because we lived out there for 4 or 5 years and lived off the land. At one stage, there was just 2 people living on this little island, and, of course, it was a source of food. But I don't believe it's a good source of food now because so much of our fish is contaminated with mercury and chemicals. And there's a little story, and this could have been in Mexico, about a fellow who found a good spot for fishing. And every day he came home with a fish. And his neighbors watched him, and soon they also went out fishing, throwing out their lines into the sea. Soon there were many people there tangling each other's lines, and someone decided to throw out a net instead of a fish line. The fish swam into the net, and when you hauled in the net, you hauled in a whole bucket of fish. Soon, everybody was doing the same. Then, the big companies heard about it, and they sent a trawler to investigate the area, and their nets scoured the sea bottom. They collected the fish they needed and threw the dead fish into the ocean. And you know, in Trincomalee Pass, in south of Gabriola Island, where I used to live, that's exactly what used to happen. These fish boats for shrimp scour the bottom and everything else for the shrimp, and throw away most of what they've taken from the sea bottom, and they throw it back into the ocean dead. Well, what happened in this town where everybody was now, where the big ships were now scouring the bottom, a lovely little town grew up and became a resort for tourists from all over the world. Then, of course, when there were hotels and homes on the waterfront and inland, they had to build sewage lines from all the hotels that pumped the raw sewage into the ocean. To this day, Victoria is still pumping all its raw sewage into the ocean. I believe it's an absolute disgrace. But look what happened to this lovely little resort where somebody started off by finding a good spot where it was for fishing. What happened was that after the sewage line was built out there, that miraculously the fish stocks, which had been rapidly in decline, made a dramatic comeback, especially scavengers like lobster. They like to eat excrement. And then the people from the polluted cities of New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Toronto, and wherever, came to this lovely resort, and they would say to each other, "I come to this place to eat the fish because it is so good and fresh." Well, I have you know that Vancouver Tourism still has a picture in which they promote Vancouver as a healthy place with somebody standing close to Lionsgate Bridge with a fishing line. And that is how we promote this little resort town. It's called Vancouver. Well, I have you know that on the North Shore, there are some 76,000 houses, units. All the sewage from that, imagine, all the toilets from 76,000 houses is pumped from Deep Cove to Lions Bay, all those houses, is pumped to a central point close to the Lions Gate Bridge. It's processed. It's stirred around. All the solids are removed, like toilet paper and everything. But basically, all the excrement is broken down to a fine mulch. They add chlorine, and all the byproducts from 76,000 houses on the North Shore goes through the primary process and is pumped into the water at Lionsgate Bridge. Well, Vancouver Tourism is promoting the wonderful aspects of coming to Vancouver. You can be close to Lionsgate Bridge and be fishing. That's how they advertise it. Well, I'll have you know that I know people who go out to Deep Cove, and when the season starts for lobster, they go out there and they put their nets out. Well, the tides carry all this material that comes from 76,000 and more toilets on the North Shore. It carries it right up the Indian Arm. We advocate a plant-based diet. So does Earth Save Canada. We believe that organic food is the best for you. Organic food that has not been treated with pesticides, herbicides, and grown in artificial conditions such as the hothouses. Well, you've been listening to Animal Voices. My co-host is Marge Adams. You're a board member of the Vancouver Humane Society. We have less than half a minute left here.
Yes,
you sit on the board. Mm-hmm. I've been on the board for Earth Save Canada for many years. I'm on the board of Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals. I'm on the board of the Animal Defense and Vivisection Society, and so is John Pranger. And many of us are assisting in putting forward the Animal Voices Film Fest. Thank you for listening.